At home, I found a note from Paul asking me to come up immediately, and it was high noon when I came spinning up the driveway on my wheel. Paul called me from the tennis court, and I dismounted and went over. But the court was empty. As I stood there, gaping open-mouthed, a tennis ball struck me on the arm, and as I turned about, another whizzed past my ear. For aught I could see of my assailant, they came whirling at me from out of space, and right well was I peppered with them. But when the balls already flung at me began to come back for a second whack, I realized the situation. Seizing a racket and keeping my eyes open, I quickly saw a rainbow flash appearing and disappearing and darting over the ground. I took out after it, and when I laid the racket upon it for a half dozen stout blows, Paul's voice rang out.
"Enough! Enough! Oh, ouch! Stop! You're landing on my naked skin, you know! Ow! Ow! I'll be good! I'll be good!"
"I only wanted you to see my metamorphosis,"
he said ruefully, and I imagined he was rubbing his hurts. A few minutes later, we were playing tennis, a handicap on my part, for I could have no knowledge of his position save when all the angles between himself, the sun, and me were in proper conjunction. Then he flashed, and only then. But the flashes were more brilliant than the rainbow, purest blue, most delicate violet, brightest yellow, and all the intermediary shades, with the scintillant brilliancy of the diamond, dazzling, blinding, iridescent. But in the midst of our play, I felt a sudden cold chill, reminding me of deep mines and gloomy crypts, such a chill as I had experienced that very morning. The next moment, close to the net, I saw a ball rebound in midair and empty space, and at the same instant, a score of feet away, Paul Tichlorne emitted a rainbow flash. It could not be he from whom the ball had rebounded, and with sickening dread, I realized that Lloyd Inwood had come upon the scene. To make sure, I looked for his shadow, and there it was, a shapeless blotch the girth of his body, the sun was overhead, moving along the ground. I remembered his threat, and felt sure that all the long years of rivalry were about to culminate in uncanny battle. I cried a warning to Paul, and heard a snarl as of a wild beast, and an answering snarl. I saw the dark blotch move swiftly across the court, and a brilliant burst of vari-colored light moving with equal swiftness to meet it. And then shadow and flash came together, and there was the sound of unseen blows. The net went down before my frightened eyes. I sprang toward the fighters, crying, "For God's sake!" But their locked bodies smote against my knees, and I was overthrown.
"You keep out of this, old man!"
I heard the voice of Lloyd Inwood from out of the emptiness. And then Paul's voice crying,
"Yes, we've had enough of peacemaking!"
From the sound of their voices, I knew they had separated. I could not locate Paul, and so approached the shadow that represented Lloyd. But from the other side came a stunning blow on the point of my jaw, and I heard Paul scream angrily,
"Now will you keep away?"
Then they came together again. The impact of their blows, their groans and gasps, and the swift flashings and shadow movings telling plainly of the deadliness of the struggle. I shouted for help, and Gaffer Bedshaw came running into the court. I could see, as he approached, that he was looking at me strangely, but he collided with the combatants and was hurled headlong to the ground. With despairing shriek and a cry of,
"Oh, Lord, I got him!"
he sprang to his feet and tore madly out of the court. I could do nothing, so I sat up, fascinated and powerless, and watched the struggle. The noonday sun beat down with dazzling brightness on the naked tennis court, and it was naked. All I could see was the blotch of shadow and the rainbow flashes, the dust rising from the invisible feet, the earth tearing up from beneath the straining foot grips, and the wire screen bulge once or twice as their bodies hurled against it. That was all. And after a time, even that ceased. There were no more flashes, and the shadow had become long and stationary. And I remembered their set boyish faces when they clung to the roots in the deep coolness of the pool. They found me an hour afterward. Some inkling of what had happened got to the servants, and they quitted the Tichlorne service in a body. Gaffer Bedshaw never recovered from the second shock he received, and is confined in a madhouse, hopelessly incurable. The secrets of their marvelous discoveries died with Paul and Lloyd, both laboratories being destroyed by grief-stricken relatives. As for myself, I no longer care for chemical research, and science is a tabooed topic in my household. I've returned to my roses. Nature's colors are good enough for me.